Industrial Light and Magic, LucasArts, Skywalker Sound, Lucasfilm Animation. This is Looking at Lucasfilm with Jim Hill and Dan Z.
Welcome to Looking at Lucasfilm, the podcast with a different perspective on the world of Star Wars, Indiana Jones, and all of the other entities that George Lucas, Kathleen Kennedy, and the rest of the team of Lucasfilm have been dreaming up for the past 40 years. I'm entertainment writer Jim Hill, and I have to tell you folks, I have so been looking forward to recording this particular episode because I wanted to hear about everything Star Wars related that my co-host Dan Z got to see and experience at San Diego Comic-Con. But then, before we got the chance to record the show, teeny, itty-bitty, infinitesimal piece of news broke. Something about a Carrie Fisher? Am I right, Dan?
Is that the princess turned general, turned hero of the rebellion? I've heard of her. Yeah, we had amazing news, didn't we? I'm thrilled. I can't wait to talk about this.
Well, dude, let's jump on in. So I guess this broke Friday when they announced that production would begin on episode 9, officially on August 1st. And so they listed the cast and the new folks who were coming in. And in the middle of it, they mentioned that Carrie Fisher's character, General Organo, will actually make it into this installment.
I think there are three major, I guess, bombshells out of this announcement. The one, the most important one is the Carrie Fisher one, which we're obviously going to talk about the most. Mm-hmm. The second one is it actually shows that Mark Hamill is in the film as Luke Skywalker, which those of you who saw The Last Jedi know that he did not make it at the end of The Last Jedi. So this is pretty great because we know that he's going to come back as a Force ghost, most likely. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking with all the things they have to hide, I mean, Lucasfilm... Or JJ has already made a rule where you're not allowed to bring a cell phone on set that has a camera on it. That's how much they're cracking down, which I really like as a non-spoiler person. So they're not going to fight that battle, will Luke come back or not? So that's out there. And the third big bombshell from this is that they said it's the final installment in the Skywalker saga.
Yeah.
So episode 10, 11, 12, as of this point, not going to happen.
Well, we still supposedly have that Obi-Wan Kenobi film that will supposedly take place during... the period between Revenge of the Sith and New Hope, when he's basically sitting on Tatooine observing Luke from a distance.
Sure. But that won't be Skywalker related. That's more, you know what I mean? That's just going to, it's not going to be Anakin or Luke or Leia. It's, or Ben Solo. It's just going to be, that's going to be the end of that particular story, which is the thing that started it all. Doesn't mean there won't be the end of Star Wars, of course. Despite what Solo pundits might tell you, this is just an end of a huge era.
No, I agree. I just, that seems pretty definite.
Yeah, yeah.
But this is Hollywood we're talking about, and...
Right.
Absolutely, positively. Oh, did I mention the other sequel? I will wait till the other side of 9 and how it does at the box office before I actually buy into the end of the Skywalker saga. I know they're saying it. I just...
Right. I agree.
And, somebody in Hollywood lied. Oh my God, certain... what a surprise. You know, so...
There also might be certain story beats in episode 9 that they don't want to talk about now because it will give away important factors in the mythology. So that's why they're doing it this way. But as far as Carrie Fisher goes, you and I talked about this with the rumors of Meryl Streep potentially reading or you know, being cast as Carrie Fisher because of Postcards from the Edge and... You know, all these kind of things. No, they always say they would never do a CGI thing. But this is really the best possible news you could imagine if you're a Carrie Fisher Princess Leia fan, because you can't possibly have the end of this saga without Carrie Fisher as Princess Leia. But because she passed, it seemed impossible. And no one had ever talked about until this point the fact that there was some unused footage from the sequel trilogy. And now that we know that there is, and they're going to use it, I think a lot of light bulbs went off in Phantom, and we thought, well... Oh, that's great. That's perfect. Why didn't we think of that before? This is, I even see that there's some trepidation about this. I don't know how there could be. We deserve to say goodbye to her, you know, along with everything else. I think it's wonderful.
Just so folks understand that Carrie's own brother, Todd, has given his blessing to this. Evidently, the folks at Disney and Lucasfilm with J.J. Abrams approached the family and explained what they wanted to do. And Todd has signed off on it. He thinks it's respectful. They've shown him the footage that they're looking to repurpose. Again, I can't say too much because the friend who told me what they're going to try to do told me this in confidence. But just be aware, again, going into this, this is repurposed footage from The Force Awakens. And as a direct result, you're going to be back in a place you know. and you're going to see Leia as you've seen her in that film, but with some different dialogue. And evidently, that's the other thing they're doing. They're going through a lot of the stuff that was shot for The Last Jedi, and they're using some interesting technology to sort of take everything that she recorded for the film, actually, as well, when she was on set and her mic was open, and using that.
Oh, cool.
The dialogue they're going to be able to sculpt, they're going to try to use everything they can that Carrie actually said and did while shooting The Force Awakens and Last Jedi, and then build her dialogue out of this material. They may have to bring in a sound-alike for individual words or...
Daunting.
Yeah, very daunting, and once the film itself is out, I'm sure Disney will have a lot to say about what the folks at ILM had to do to make this happen. But she's in very, very loving hands, I guess is the polite way to put it, who are trying to be respectful and give the character and Carrie the goodbye she deserves. So enough about that amazing piece of news. Let's pivot now to, again, so this was your first time at San Diego Comic-Con.
Yes, first time in Comic-Con, first time at San Diego.
Wow. So was my description right? Was it like being in a Fellini film?
Very much so. It was, my wife and I went there a couple of days early, sort of an anniversary slash work trip. And the day of preview night, she went out and did some shopping, went to the beach, and I took an Uber and went to the con, because we're actually right by the hotel. And on my way there, a motorcycle whizzed past me, and the driver was in full Captain America gear, including an authentic-looking shield on his back as he drove past me. So I thought, okay, here we go. And I was not disappointed. I mean, then I turned to my right, I see She-Ra. I saw a female Skeletor, you know, and I wasn't even inside within like a mile of the con yet. So, yeah, it was quite a thing. But the Star Wars presence there was much more intense than I had expected. I mean, typically, San Diego Comic-Con is not the huge place for Star Wars reveals. Now, for The Force Awakens, Harrison Ford was there, and they had that great, you know, hey, let's go across the street. We're going to a concert, and they give everybody lightsabers. But that was kind of a very unique thing. But this time, of course, we had major news, and it came in the form of the 10-year anniversary panel of The Clone Wars.
Now, just to clarify here, what we're talking about is the animated series from that started in 2008 in Cartoon Network, not what they refer to as the micro series, the thing that Gennady Tartakovsky did.
And none of it's canonical either, which is probably one of the reasons why they just don't really talk about it.
We are talking about the CG series that debuted on Cartoon Network in 2008, set in the period between Episode 2, Attack of the Clones, and Episode 3, Revenge of the Sith. And this is a show for Star Wars fans, so we're not breaking any news here. But those of us who remember what happened with Clone Wars, when Disney bought Lucasfilm in October of 2012, there were a lot of decisions made. And among them was, you know, if we're going ahead with a film starting up the Skywalker saga again, that maybe we need to, you know, wind some stuff down. So at this point, they'd already talked about, what, the sixth season of Clone Wars, and they decided not to go forward with it. They'd made them, in fact, what, they showed up on Netflix the following year, didn't they? Or
yeah, it was called the lost missions, or the lost episodes. So it was went to Netflix, like you said, and it was streamed, so all of the episodes were dropped at once. But it didn't really have an ending. The last arc was a Yoda arc where he goes to where the Sith originated, and he fought a shadowy version of himself. And at the end, it was this very nice little kind of metaphysical journey where he's talking to Anakin Skywalker, and it pans away to this tree that's strong in the Force, which shows up later in the comics, some comics. But that was the end. It very much ended with kind of a dot instead of an exclamation point.
Yeah, and for a lot of us, it was kind of disappointed, and actually, to my way of thinking, colored the initial perception of Star Wars Rebels, because there was kind of a feeling in the fan community that, all right, we got this, because Disney wanted their own thing for Disney XD, and they didn't necessarily want to continue what Cartoon Network had done. And there was a slight hint of sour grapes that went away quickly when people actually saw Star Wars Rebels and, you know, saw how respectful it was of Ralph McQuarrie's original artwork for the films and that sort of thing. And so, you know, again, you know, we all got on board, but there was still kind of this sadness that that hadn't ended as well as it did. So take me into the room there when they reveal that here are 12 episodes coming and, you know, we're going to end this thing right.
Okay, so the night before the panel, which the panel's on Thursday, but Wednesday was preview night, I was going back to my hotel at the end of preview night, and I walk into the lobby, and I look over, and I see Dave Filoni, and I see one of the Lucasfilm heads of publicity, and I wave, say hello, and then I keep walking, and as it turns out, Dave is walking with me, and he walks in the same elevator as I do. It's just Dave Filoni and I in an elevator. Pretty crazy, right? And I reintroduce myself to him. I've met him a number of times. But he meets so many people, so it's, you know, it's hard to tell if he even can keep track anymore. And we just kind of shot the breeze about the differences between the con and this con and a celebration. And he said, well, get some rest. It's going to be a long day tomorrow. And that was it. And I left thinking, oh, that was cool. But naturally, he doesn't show his cards. So we fast forward to the next day, and we're at the panel. And the way San Diego Comic-Con works is they don't empty panel rooms. So if you want to see a panel that's at 3 o'clock, you better get there at 8 a.m. because they're not going to empty the panels for anything. So you have to pretty much sit through whatever.
When you and I were talking out ahead of San Diego Comic-Con, I didn't tell you about camping. I didn't tell you about get into the room early. I mean, I'm so glad you found out about that, because on the day that the panel was like, oh my God, I didn't tell him about this, and he's going to show up an hour and a half in advance and not get in.
Well, fortunately, that's a whole other story off camera or off the mic about how getting into that thing, because that was quite an adventure.
Okay.
But we got in, we sat through a thing about a virtual reality Blade Runner thing, which was fine. And then the Clone Wars kicked in and Dave came out, and Matt Lanter, who plays Anakin, and then Ahsoka Tano, played by Ashley Eckstein, and Portilla, I can't think of her name, Athens maybe, who was a producer, and then Amy Radcliffe hosted it, and then Kevin Kiner does the music. And they basically showed a number of images and art from existing episodes and ones that they were thinking about doing. And I was at Celebration Anaheim when they did after the Clone Wars panel with Dave Filoni and Pablo Hidalgo, who's one of the people in charge of the story group. And they showed animatics of Clone Wars episodes. And some of them aired on StarWars.com. And they were, one of them was four episodes with Asajj Ventress and Quinlan Vos, which became the novel Dark Disciple, which is an excellent novel written by Christy Golden. So we knew about that story because those scripts were modified into a novel. We also know there's a story come, there was a Siege of Mandalore arc, which featured at the end of that arc, the end of the Clone Wars, and Ahsoka Tano dueling Maul, and she ends up sparing Maul's life to save Rex, you know, clone trooper Rex.
Of course,
yeah. And then they run off. So so we knew about those stories because of the novel Ahsoka and in the novel Dr. Disciple. But we didn't, we also knew there were other things out there, but we never got to see them. We never got to see the end of the Clone Wars. We never got to see any closure. So the panel's starting to wrap up, and it's been an hour. And Dave, is Dave, if you've ever seen Dave Filoni talk, and I know you've interviewed him many a times, He's quite a storyteller, and he's also quite a showman.
Oh, yes.
You know, he knows how to work a crowd.
Yep.
So at the end, he says, well, you know, I mean, this is the 10th anniversary, and I feel like I need to give you guys some sort of a treat. And he couldn't have been more, like, calm and sort of looking down and very quiet. He goes, so, you know, we're going to show you this. And the lights dim. And then they show you hear Rex. You hear Dee Bradley Baker talking. Oh, it was actually just one of the, yeah, it is Rex. It was one of the clones. They all sound the same, of course, because that's how Dee Bradley Baker does it. And they pan backwards, and you see the different clone helmets, and there's fire, and you know it's new. And I'm thinking to myself, because we're all just completely riveted, and I'm thinking, are they doing some sort of a mini spinoff just about the clones for Netflix? And then they showed new art, and it was Anakin and Obi-Wan talking to Rex, and there were these Republic cruisers. And then they show Ahsoka, and she turns around, and it appears she's got a Mandalorian next to her. It looks like Bo-Katan, for those of you who are familiar with Mandalorian culture. And boy, I'm a nerd, aren't I?
No, keep going, keep going.
So then she says, hello, Master, it's been a while. And then the lights go out, and then it says, hashtag Clone Wars saved. And people screamed, interrupted. And I've videoed this entire thing, and it's actually the pinned tweet on Coffee with Kenobi's Twitter page. And it's got the most views of a video I've ever posted. because I wanted people to feel the energy and the electricity of us finding out that it was returning. And we were just so excited, because I can honestly tell you, and I was standing in line with some people who get a lot of big spoilers from the sets and the animated series and all kinds of things, who very loudly proclaimed, oh, this isn't going to be anything. They might announce a novel, but they're not going to announce anything. So we were stunned. And then I talked to some people from Lucasfilm afterwards, and they were through the moon happy, Jim, because they weren't sure if it was going to leak or not. And the fact that it didn't, and a lot of them made sure they were in the room so they could experience it too, because they'd known about it forever. Mm-hmm. It was the most exciting time I've ever had as a Star Wars fan since I heard in October 2012 that Disney purchased Lucasfilm. It was absolutely electric.
So we have 12 new episodes coming, though there may be a backdoor built in that, depending on fan reaction or that sort of thing, but it's more about perhaps circling back on, as you mentioned, storylines that have been touched on by novels or that sort of thing. You know, they want to give themselves the opportunity that if it is as popular as they think it's going to be, that there could be further episodes produced. But we're at least going to get this 12. We're going to get the ending that Dave and the team had originally hoped to do. But did you hear the other part of this story? Now remember, in 2013, March of 2013, when we were told, quote unquote, that, you know, the production of Star Wars Clone Wars was winding down, there was another show that was in production, and in fact, they had completed 39 episodes, but that also got postponed. You know, Star Wars Detours?
I had heard people talking about that, and until you and I chatted, I hadn't heard it as like an actual rumor. And personally, one of the reasons I like Disney purchasing Lucasfilm so much is we stopped with the parodies. Mm-hmm. You know, the Family Guys and you know, the Robot Chickens, which were fine, and some were funny and some not as funny as others. So I was okay that Detours didn't air, but I know a lot of people, a lot of talented people put a lot of time, energy, and hard work into it. So they deserve to have it air, but I had not heard that that was actually going to be a thing. But are you hearing otherwise?
Last month, Disney purchased a trademark for it.
Oh, interesting.
The way Disney operates is that, you know, when it's going to be putting, you know, a film or a property out with a specific title that it wants to lock down, it'll purchase the trademark, it'll purchase the copyright. And the fact that Disney has done this suggests that this is strictly on the streaming service. It will be part of the quote-unquote Star Wars bundle, which just this past Friday, both Disney and Fox shareholders signed off on the $71 billion acquisition. Now, that doesn't mean the deal's done yet. There's actually 12 additional hurdles here. Most of them have to do with countries outside of the U.S. signing off on it. Disney just filed paperwork with, for example, the nation of Brazil, and they have to put together a presentation for the European Union. So we'll be in the late spring, early summer of 2019 before this is finally all said and done. But once this deal is done, there are certain rights to certain versions of the Star Wars movies that only become Disney's after the 20th Century Fox acquisition. Now, all of these Star Wars films in their various versions, by the way, that's the other thing.
It's a big part of it, yeah.
Yep. But again, it's the Star Wars bundle. And the notion is that, you know, you can go over there and there will be, once Episode 9 is complete, you know, you'll have the entire Star Wars saga, but you can choose between the special edition or the original cut of the film and then the various animated series. I think the only thing that's off the table, and
I know what you're going to say.
Yes, the holiday special. Everything but the holiday special. And even then, my understanding is they will at least excise the chunk where we get introduced to Boba Fett. You know, that will be a standalone piece that you can finally see in finished animation. But this is the whole notion of what Disney's going to do with the streaming service.
So you say Star Wars bundle. Does that mean we don't have one size fits all? There's actually different packages for this service?
The streaming service kind of grew out of a project at Disney called The Vault. And in fact, Disney has been digitizing not only its films and cartoons, I mean, live action, animation, television shows and all that. They have been digitizing works in progress. They have been digitizing concept art. Say, for example, you're a Beauty and the Beast fan. what Disney wants a Beauty and the Beast fan to be able to do. If, you know, one afternoon you're jonesing to see Beauty and the Beast, you can go and see the original version of the film that the Purdoms did back when Belle had a cat and an aunt that was a pain in the butt and a younger sister. And, you know, there were no songs in the show at all.
That's a tale as old as time right there.
There we go. But you can also then get to see the work in progress version that was shown at the New York Film Festival that got people so excited about Beauty and the Beast. You can see the version that was released in 1991, or you can see the version that was done for IMAX in the late 90s that included Human Again, or the live action film. I mean, the whole notion is, depending on how deep you want to go, that's what Disney will give you. But the Vault project was originally built on the idea that you would buy so much time in the vault. The notion is that if you wanted just 10 hours a month, you'd pay a certain fee. If you wanted 25 hours a month, you'd pay, you know, a higher fee, 50 to 100.
Oh, gosh.
So the streaming service, but then, of course, Netflix came along and Hulu and that sort of thing and changed the business dynamic. So Disney, which was creating all this these assets for a time-driven system, now it's just sort of the notion of, okay, so we'll just make it so they have so much material to go through that they'll only be here. You know, they'll only be on our site, and we'll just have to figure out how to monetize that. The interesting thing is, of course, when Disney buys Lucas, you know, in October of 2012, they are years into this digitizing project at that point, and they just sort of pivoted and did the same thing.
But it's not like you can only get the Star Wars version or the Marvel version or something like that. It's all together.
Yeah, but the notion is that in much the same way as you go to a Disney theme park and there's Fantasyland and there's Tomorrowland and there's Frontierland,
oh, sure,
there will be the Marvel section, there will be a Lucasfilm section, there will be a Muppet section, there will be now a Fox section, which will be split into the modern, wow, Fox Studio, Fox Television, Fox Classic. I've got a friend who's already working on how they're going to handle Shirley Temple, you know, because Shirley made so many of her movies there at Fox back in the 30s.
Wow.
So, but anyway, we've kind of wandered far afield here. Back to Comic-Con. So how long did you hang on at this year's Comic-Con?
I was only there a couple of days, but after the actual announcement of Clone Wars saved, mm-hmm, then all the other news, all the publishing news, or most of it was surrounded around the prequel era, which is sort of ironic, mm-hmm, because there was a lot of scuttlebutt that Disney wasn't as concerned about the prequel era, and they wanted to sort of avoid that for a while. But they're having Master and Apprentice, which is a novel about Qui-Gon Jinn and Obi-Wan Kenobi, mm-hmm, written by Claudia Gray, and then they're going to have a Padme novel written by E.K. Johnson, who wrote the Ahsoka novel I mentioned earlier. And that's going to be set in between episodes 1 and 2, whereas the Master and Apprentice is going to take place before episode 1. And then there's going to be, I think, a 30-issue maxi series. Mm-hmm. It's going to be an age of the Republic, age of Rebellion, and age of Resistance. And each one is going to cover, I think, 4 heroes and 4 villains per, you know, era of Star Wars. So they're loaded. And there were a ton of announcements. And, of course, the collectibles and things. And people were excited, and I'm sure you probably saw this, but the number one thing that was tweeted about throughout all of Comic-Con was Clone Wars, if that tells you. Because there were a lot of major announcements, new trailers from DC and all kinds of stuff.
But totally.
Clone Wars seemed to rule.
Yep. One of my favorite moments coming out of this year's San Diego happened the Saturday with the Rally for Rose.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that was amazing.
You had all these people who were dressed as Rose Tico, plus, you know, folks who were dressed as their favorite Star Wars characters, appeared together outside the hall to, you know, sort of show that in spite of what a small select subset of the fan community had said about this character, that a lot of us really do love Rose. And
that's right.
I've got here on my desk right now two books that Fun Studio did. And are you aware of these, the Rose Tico Resistance Fighter and Bomber Command?
That was written by Jason Fry.
Yes.
Yeah, I am.
They are fascinating books. They're basically done in diary format, and one is told, mm-hmm, you know, sort of the Last Jedi story from Rose's point of view, and then you have one that goes a little bit further back And it takes a different slant because it's Rose's sister Paige, who, of course, you know, those of us who've seen the film, you know, she doesn't make it all that far into the movie, but she's a real hero. And mm-hmm. but I love the design of these books. I love how they're put together. Just good, solid fun, but in not the sort of traditional novel format.
Yeah, it's got that epistolary style. Jason Fry did one of those for Rey after The Force Awakens too, which led up to her meeting BB-8 and Finn on Jakku. And yeah, those are wonderful.
Speaking of books, though, that just this past week we had Star Wars Thrawn Alliance drop, and it's interesting that you mentioned Padme, because if you go to Barnes & Noble and get your copy of the Star Wars novel there, it comes with a mini poster. Double-sided mini poster, and on one side it's basically a recreation of the book's cover, but the second poster is of Padme on a certain planet, Batuu. And in fact, it's her walking purposefully through the streets of Black Spire Outpost. So, correct me if I'm wrong, Dan, could we consider this the first Star Wars Galaxy's Edge collectibles, or would you default to those cards that they handed out at the Galactic Night event?
I would say the cards, or there were a few hats that they sold very, very briefly. And then they also sold a lanyard at the last Galactic Nights.
Did they?
Yeah, I picked one up because I saw it at Mickey's of Hollywood.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But this is the one that's been widely distributed that you didn't have to be at a theme park to get. So I'd say that's a pretty good bet.
Okay, now speaking of Thrawn Alliances, when we get back from our break here, what's particularly cool about this book is Timothy Zahn has folded in a lot of information about Black Spire Outpost, which Dan and I will now walk you through. But we'll do that right after this break.
You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
And we're back. As I was mentioning, so we have the Star Wars Thrawn Alliances, and this is by Timothy Zahn, who has written a number of Star Wars books that have been fairly well received, haven't they? Or
oh my God, he's the godfather of Star Wars, not named George Lucas, really. Mm-hmm. I mean, he did the Thrawn trilogy back in, I think, 1995 or 1996, mm-hmm. and introduced the character of Grand Admiral Thrawn. Yeah, he's fantastic. Fans love him. And this is the sequel to Thrawn from 2017. Now, that book and Star Wars Rebels are season 3 are the first times that Thrawn became a canonical character, because before he's part of the Legends line.
Got it.
And by the way, I'm only halfway through the book, but oh my goodness, is it a must read. It's fantastic.
Now, Dan and I are going to try to thread the needle very carefully here, because again, half the fun of this book is that the catchphrase for the book is, it's time for Thrawn to face his future and time for Vader to face his past. So, you know, there's a lot of great story here that jumps around mm-hmm. time-wise. So don't necessarily want to give away too much out of this. But what I can say is basically a third of this 368-page hardcover is set on Batuu. And the timeline, the primary timeline, if we sort of overlook the time jumping, is basically set, what, between Solo, A Star Wars Story, and the Star Wars Rebel television series. In fact, I want to say in the first 3 to 5 pages, they actually mention the certain troublesome set of Rebels.
Yeah, I was trying to map it out, because at the beginning it says it's after Rebels, but really the parts where it's Thrawn and Vader in their primes was right after season 3 of Rebels is over.
Got it.
And then the other parts are set during the Clone Wars.
Okay,
where it's Anakin and Thrawn before he joins the Empire, or before the Empire even exists.
But for those of us who have been looking for more information about Galaxy's Edge, what's truly great about this book is the way Zahn has masterfully sort of breadcrumbed in.
Yes.
You come away with a better understanding. But tell you what, we're just going to stick to that material tonight. The way this gets started is that the Emperor calls Vader and Thrawn together because he senses, and I'm quoting now from the text of Thrawn Alliances, A disturbance, which is located at the edge of the unknown regions, appears to be centered on a planet called named Batu. And again, Zahn gives you some additional information about where Batu would actually be located. It's the edge of the outer rim, right up against the unknown regions. And what then sets this story in motion is that Padme's ship has been reported abandoned on Batu by local hunters, which, of course, in the story that's set in the past, sends Anakin scrambling to try to find out what happened to her. And this is where it starts to get fun, because in the story, Zahn sets the scene when Anakin goes to Batu to investigate. He finds Padme's ship parked in a small clearing of forested area kilometers away from Black Spire Outpost, which, for those of you who have seen the concept art of that squadron of X-Wings that the Resistance is parked out in the woods, this is that setting. And not only that, when Thrawn and Anakin arrive on the scene and begin to investigate, they find this group of locals clustered around the vessels, and there's this wonderful little dialogue exchange between the two characters, and Thrawn says, "They claim to be simple merchants," and Vader's like, "Armed merchants?" And it's like, most, you know, most travelers in this part of space are armed, Thrawn said, but he then follows up by saying the group huddled around Padme's ship are surely smugglers, not simple merchants. So already we're getting that flavor of who's going to live in this world, but you might want to be on your guard. So they end up taking speeder bikes into Black Spire itself. And then Zahn does this beautiful job giving you a flavor of what Black Spire Outpost actually looks like. That he describes its most outstanding structure is a trading post with an attached cantina. That's what dominates the center of town. But what's interesting about this building is it's pressed up against the ruins of this ancient civilization that once stood there. And some of the houses and businesses have been actually built into the ruins. That a lot of the buildings are freestanding buildings. And then above all this are the petrified remains of the giant black trees that had given this outpost its name. They tower over everything, mysterious and brooding. And Zahn is such a wordsmith. He, for example, then gets back to, at one point, touches on the ruins again. He describes how the ruins Black Spire was built beside and into looked ancient, like something lost out of time, with a mixed sense of intrigue, desperation, and ruthlessness. He describes this as the planet is somewhere between wild space and the unknown regions. Traveling in the unknown regions is difficult, which is why only the bravest and most skilled pilots even attempt to get to this outpost.
Because of the hyperspace lanes, and basically what that means for the uninitiated is that there's only, when you go to light speed, you can't just go willy-nilly. You have to find calculations and find things. You don't, as Han says in Hope, you know, fly too close to it inside a star or get too close to a supernova and boom, you're done. So these aren't, some of these places, and like you said, in remote and wild space, which is the wild space is a series of novels for young kids anyway. So there's some turf there that they might explore as well. But it's hard to get to because it's not mapped out. It's so remote. And like you said, the way he describes these things, I mean, I'm reading this, you know, much like you, and I'm just pouring over these little subtle contextual hints as to what the atmosphere of Batuu is going to look like in the landscape and the architecture. And it's just, it's genius, isn't it? Because what they're doing is, you're excited about Clone Wars because of San Diego Comic-Con, and half this novel is set during the Clone Wars, and then they're teasing you about what Batuu's going to look like in the feel and the atmosphere, and just knowing that Thrawn and Vader have been there. And then when you're going to go there, you're going to be looking around saying, oh, I wonder if this is where Thrawn found this. And Jim, I can't think of another franchise that does things like this. It's just pure genius.
I actually called a friend in Imagineering to get, because again, given how specific he is about Black Spire Outpost, for example, you know, he mentions that, look, you know, when you go to the outpost, there's the shortage of straight wide streets. In fact, if you're exploring the place, you have to be ready for these twisty paths that wind all over the place. But so what did you do? Did you show him the model? Did you show him the concept paintings? And evidently he got this grand tour of Imagineering, and they gave him, you know, a lot of the descriptive material. Now, mind you, the one thing I guess I should caution folks is there aren't a lot of specifics. I mean, for example, with that pack of trading cards we were talking about earlier, you got names of like places like Smuggler's Alley or Savvy's Path, and you don't get that with Thrawn Alliances, but what you do get is some wonderful language. I mean, for example, when he describes the residents of Black Spire Outpost, he says they look as scar, as faded as the rest of the outpost does. But at the same time, he makes sure you have a realistic expectation when we all finally get to enter the theme park and experience Galaxy's Edge.
Well, a lot of cantina stuff too, and I can't help but wonder when I was reading it if the stuff with the bartender who comes in a couple of times, if that exact bartender is going to be the person that we're going to interact with.
I wonder. And again, more to the point, there were some names of beverages that I meant to include as part of my notes here.
I saw that too.
Let's circle back on these, but he talks about how Black Spire didn't look all that big. It's hardly big enough to support 400 or 500 people. So if you've seen the model, it's like, okay, yeah, I could buy that as the actual size of it. But the interesting thing is that you don't just get Anakin and Vader and Zahn's take on Black Spire Outpost. What's great is he also includes Padme's, who has a far different impression of Batuu. She talks about how the Black Towers that she'd seen as she arriving the planet, obviously with the source of the Black Spire Outpost name, but weren't structures or towers, but rather the petrified remains of trees scattered like sentinels throughout the town and the region around it. And the whole place struck her as beautiful, mysterious, and a little bit sad.
Yeah, isn't that lovely?
It is. It's very well written. It is. It's just basically the first third that's set in Batuu, and then there's just an amazing adventure that goes forward at this point, which I will not spoil. So, but, you know, you can find all about that by picking up your own copy of Thrawn Alliances and getting your own cool mini poster of Padme walking through Black Spire Outpost. But I came away from this book that much more excited about finally getting into Batuu, because he made it really sound like a place that was worth exploring, you know, that to wander down these twisty back streets. And
The trick about Batuu, and you and I and Lynn Tess have talked about this a lot, they didn't want you to live Luke Skywalker's experiences. You've already done that in the movies. You want to relive what Rey had done. You wanted to do your own thing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Batuu is a place that they created. Okay, that's great. But when I read this book, I suddenly feel like, okay, Batuu's Star Wars now. Batuu is Star Wars. Some of my favorite characters have been here. They're describing it for me. I'm starting to visualize it. So I know when I go there next year, these are the things that are going to go through my mind, and it's going to feel Star Wars to me. And as a huge, huge fan, mm-hmm. like, to me, that means the world. I feel like... You know, the big fans are sometimes the hardest sell because they're so meticulous, but this breathes life into it and makes it feel like Star Wars.
No, absolutely.
It oxygenates it, if that makes sense.
It's definitely gas in the tank. For those of us who, the dates that we've heard, June 21st through the 23rd, 2019, for the Anaheim version opening, and the folks at Disney World don't even want to talk about, at this point, you know, when they'll be opening the Disney Hollywood Studios version, but for now, this will just have to keep us going. So suggest highly you chase this down. And I guess that's it for now for looking at Lucasfilm this time around. Though the next time we get together and chat, Dan, we can obviously talk about the Star Wars Rebels Season 4.
Yeah.
Which goes on sale this Tuesday and supposedly has all sorts of amazing extra features and that sort of thing. And
I've got my copy already. I definitely have plenty to talk about. It's really great, really fun.
Well, very cool. We will do that. And also, given that Solo is coming out in September, we can talk a little bit about that, the Blu-ray, DVD, and the digital download.
Mm-hmm.
Till then, Dan, where else can folks find you?
You can find me once a week at Coffee with Kenobi. You can find us anywhere you can find podcasts.
This show's well worth seeking out, folks. He's still got San Diego stories that he hasn't shared yet. So anyway, till the next time we get together here at Looking at Lucasfilm, this is Jim Hill, and on behalf of Dan Z, thanks for listening.
Thank you for listening to Looking at Lucasfilm with Jim Hill and Dan Z. One of many great podcasts on the Jim Hill Media Network.